It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Who's your favorite in the home run derby tonight?
I'm going Bryce Harper. He's kind of under the radar. It's his home stadium, hometown. He's going to go out there and put on a show. Who you got?
Kyle Schwarber. He's got big body. Yeah. If one of our guys wins and the other
who goes the furthest?
Oh, sure. We can do that.
Swing and a high fly ball center field. That will do it. Bryce Harper. Here in Washington, D.C., the Washington Nationals outfielder hoists the trophy, and he is your 2018 T-Mobile Home Run Derby champion. Said you
now, I know. How about that? How about that? Your boys, Stokely and myself, predicting the finalists.
How about that?
It was a field of eight. We had the two finalists. You picked Bryce Harper. I picked Kyle Schwarber, and there they were, and I swear to God, that was for me personally, that was the most dramatic finish to a home run derby that I can remember.
I mean, what a finish there at the end. Bryce Harper didn't look like he was going to be able to get it done.
Not at all.
Like, there's no chance he can hit, I don't know how many he needed there in the last.
He needed 18.
In the last, whatever, 30 seconds, and it was just rapid fire from his dad throwing BP. Pretty cool finish there. Had the American bat and had the bandana.
That was something,
you know,
man.
Had the swag going. And then he delivered in his hometown, home team stadium. And what a great finish. That was really cool. Really, really cool. Fun to watch. And I did pick him, so I do get lunch. I didn't realize yesterday when we were leaving that he was a favorite.
Yeah.
Because everything
he was one of them. It was like him or I think it was him or Aguilar, right at the time, depending on where you look.
Because a lot of people were picking Baez.
Yep, Javier Baez. Yep.
And last night, whenever Harper won it, and I texted you, you're like, "Oh, you picked chalk. You know, you picked the favorite. Yeah. You picked." And I was like, "Oh, really? Was he the favorite? Because you didn't give the odds yesterday. You were supposed to give the odds.
I did not give the odds.
And you dropped the ball, and so that's why I thought Bryce Harper was a middle-of-the-road type of guy because of the season he's having. Now, he has a lot of home runs on the year, but
he's second in the NL.
Yeah, yep. He's just, as far as all the other things, like, he's having an awful season.
Stokely's hitting .214.
Yeah.
.214. How about this? This is a stat that will blow your mind. And I texted this into DMAC yesterday, and I wasn't trying to lobby a case of one way or the other. I was just pointing it out. DMAC was saying, you know, Bryce Harper is hitting sixth in the All-Star game tonight. And it's in Washington. Why is that happening? The other reason that that's happening is because he's hitting .214 on the season. Here's a stat that will blow your mind, okay? He is, Bryce Harper, 60 percentage points lower than the next NL batter tonight on the season in terms of batting average. He is hitting 60 points lower than the next NL batter tonight. But the power numbers are there. The walk numbers are there. The on-base percentage numbers are there. But he just is not putting the ball in play. He's hitting it to somebody or he's hitting it out.
Wow, that's I didn't realize that. 60?
60 percentage points. He's hitting .214 on the season. Not for the month. He's hitting .214 on the season.
Ian Desmond's looking at him and laughing at him.
Correct.
Like, wow, you're bad.
Ian Desmond's April is saying, pick it up, Bryce.
No, but it's, look, the baseball All-Star game and the festivities is really good. They do a good job with it. And the home run derby, it was lacking a little star power this year. But the drama that it had, and Bryce Harper with the American bat, you know.
It said, "We the People" on it. I thought that was
just
so cool.
Really, really a cool situation. And to do it there in front of his hometown fans and in his stadium.
They were just fired up too.
Yeah. Chanting his name. And that was awesome. That's what it's all about.
He's got the bandana with the Bryce hair hanging out. I mean, dude, he's got, and pardon me here, Bryce Harper's got the best hair out. Bryce Harper's got the best hair out. He's got the American bandana. He's got the Capitol building on his socks. He's got the American bat. It was just swagger on 100,000 trillion.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Fun event. And, you know, they do a good job with it. They do a really good job with it. And it delivered. You know, it was entertaining.
It did.
And so we'll see how the game is tonight.
Are you going to watch?
No, probably not.
No,
I might tune in a little bit. We'll see. It's just not a must-see game for me.
Okay.
But if I'm sitting around the house, yes, I will turn it on. But if I'm not sitting, I'm not going to make it, you know, I want to be here to watch this game. No, I'll see, you know, it's just me and my oldest, my wife, you know, she and my youngest.
That's right.
They took off on vacation.
They're in Florida.
So we stayed back because we, you know, we got to work.
Right.
We got to work. We got to grind. And so we're working and they're out there on the beach. But anyway, so it's just us two. So we might go watch a movie or something, but it's not must-see TV for me.
Okay, I'll be watching.
Yeah.
I'm interested. It doesn't mean a lot to me, but it's the time of year where, you know, I love watching guys compete. I love watching guys compete. So I'll be watching tonight.
Do you think they'll compete at a really high level?
Yeah. I mean, high enough for me to watch, yeah. I mean, and I heard the fellows talking about this morning, Cecil and Stink. The baseball all-star game is the closest semblance to what actually happens during the season. The NBA All-Star Game traditionally doesn't look like an actual game. The Pro Bowl, it doesn't even look like the same sport. Hockey, they tinker with the rules. They allow more space. They divide up the rosters. But baseball is the closest representation to, like, what we saw this past week in just a regular season. So I'll be watching. It's Max Scherzer starting for the NL against Chris Sale in the AL.
Same as last year, I believe.
I believe
both
so.
Both those guys were the starters last year also.
I believe
Pretty
so.
Cool.
Really cool. Let me ask you, does it make a difference to you in your sort of indifference with the game tonight, the fact that home field advantage for the World Series is no longer in the mix? If that was the case, would it be more of a priority for you personally?
Yeah, because I think they would play for a little bit more and play to win the game a little bit harder, a little bit more focused, especially teams that are competing to get in the playoffs. Now, the other players, if you're on a bad team, if you're on the Orioles or a bad team like that, you know you're not going to the playoffs, maybe you say, I don't care. I don't want, maybe the Yankees or the Red Sox to have home field advantage. So it wouldn't matter to you as a player. But if you're one of those teams that's competing for a spot, you realize how important that is.
Yeah.
And so you would play a little extra harder, and you would try to win a little bit more, and it would mean a little bit more to you than when you just play an all-star game and what do you win? What do you lose if you don't have nothing on the line? Maybe a few $1,000 more for the winning team is what it is, I guess. I'm not sure. But other than that, these guys have a ton of money. That's not going to really motivate them to really go out there and get the win, like just like the Pro Bowl. Same thing. You know, winning team gets a little bit more than the losing team.
Right.
You won't see guys really playing hard until maybe the last couple minutes of the fourth quarter. But in baseball, when you have home field on the line for the World Series, it gives you a lot more motivation, especially if your team is in the mix.
Right. I agree with that. I agree with that. But at the same time, I just never felt like it was appropriate to have an exhibition game determine your most important game.
Sure.
Your most important series. It just didn't make sense to me. So I'm glad that they moved on from that. But
I didn't mind it. Didn't mind it.
You didn't mind it when it happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I just felt like guys would be playing a little bit harder. A little bit more motivation, especially for those teams that have a chance to get in the playoffs.
Sure, like our guys.
Yeah.
Story and Arenado tonight. Arenado will start. Story will come off the bench. But looking forward to it. How about this story, though? This is cool. The Washington Nationals, and I didn't realize this till this morning, they told the fans at Nationals Park that, and this is before the contest started, they sent an email to their mailing list and said that they will reduce ticket prices in lower-level seats by $1 for every home run that Bryce Harper hits. He hit 45 home runs en route to winning the trophy. Lower-level tickets, a lot of them in Washington Nationals Park, they're below $45. So tickets for the game against the Mets on July 31st and August 1st, as well as the Cincinnati series, August 2nd, 4th, and 5th.
Tickets, so five games.
Five games. Tickets will be as cheap as $1 in the lower section if you were a part of that.
Oh, that's really cool. Good job by them. They're putting on a good show, and that was a good performance last night. Kudos to Bryce Harper. You saw his teammates were so fired up. And just really, really cool.
Yep, and just to localize it here, the Nationals are 12th in the league in average attendance, 31,000. And I was like, where do the Rockies stack up? The Rockies in Major League Baseball are 7th in attendance. And boy, I'll tell you, I'm out there probably about once a week. I was there on Friday night, 39,000.
Yeah.
Friday night, 39,000.
Good crowd.
It was like unbelievable.
Yes.
It was so cool. Stoke, you can never find consensus anymore, right? I mean, even 10 dentists can't agree what type of toothpaste you should be using. That's why they say 9 out of 10 dentists. Well, not so fast, as all four of ESPN's AFC West reporters agree on one thing for this coming season. I'll tell you exactly what it is next. You can never find consensus anymore, right? Everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's got a platform now to share that opinion. And there's Discord. Just sign on Twitter or Facebook. Let alone, you know, listening to sports analysts trying to agree on any one particular thing.
Never happens.
Never happens.
But you got an example of it happening, though.
I do have an example of it happening. And I opened up ESPN.com, and they had a simple question, straightforward. AFC West, who will win the division? And they reached out to Jeff Legwald here in Denver, Eric Williams, Los Angeles, Adam Teicher in Kansas City, and Paul Gutierrez in Oakland. And they all agreed on one thing. And that's the Los Angeles Chargers are going to win the AFC West.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I think when you're making predictions, that's what probably 90% of people would say, really. If you did a big poll of a lot of people, you would have a high majority of those people picking the Chargers. You saw what they did last year after, what did they start, 0-4?
Yeah, 0-4.
And then they went on this run, and they got the almost made the playoffs.
They won 9 of their last 12.
So a team that got better and better, first-year head coach, was heading in the right direction, and you'd think that they would continue to get better. And you look at that group, they got a lot of talent. Defense, you know, and then they add Derwin James as a safety from Florida State that somehow he fell to him. The guy's a really good football player, but they got a really good defense. There's no, you can't look and say, oh, that's a big, big concern. You know, they got a running back, they got receivers, a quarterback is a veteran quarterback that's played in a lot of big games. And the one thing that you could look at right now and say, well, what about their tight end? You know, they lost Hunter Henry already.
Oh, that's right.
With an ACL in the offseason. So that's a big blow to them, but they got Virgil Green.
They got Virgil Green.
They got Virgil.
They got Virg. I'll tell you what, man. It is going to sting like vinegar in a wound this year if Virgil Green, you see him Sunday after Sunday contributing, especially if it happens against the Denver Broncos.
If he makes the Broncos pay. That would hurt. That would hurt. But he's got a great opportunity there.
He does.
When you're playing with a quarterback like Phillip Rivers, you're going to have opportunities. So we'll see if Virgil kind of emerges. I was always waiting for Virgil, saying this is going to be his year. This is going to, and he just never happened here for some reason. But this could be the year for him.
This could be. Well, he's got a Hall of Fame quarterback who's still in his prime, and their premier tight end, as you referenced, Hunter Henry, is done for the season. So if Virgil Green, if there was ever in his professional a road that he's been on, if there was ever an opportunity to maximize, it's now.
This is it. Nobody's going to be looking at Virgil Green. Nobody's going to be paying much attention to him. You're stopping these outside receivers, Keenan Allen and company, Melvin Gordon, these running backs that they have out of the backfield. So, you know, he's like the last guy that you're going to say, let's make sure that we keep Virgil Green in check. So he's going to have a lot of opportunities. A lot of opportunities. He's in a really, really good situation.
He, the Chargers, they are, you know, I've seen them called the trendy pick. I heard and read someone say that this past week that the Chargers are the trendy pick. I don't think they're the trendy pick. I think they're the default pick. Because if you were not going to, if you're not going to pick the Chargers, just from what we know, now we can talk about what we expect and how it's different from the things that we know. But the things that we know, the things that are established right now, it's got to be the Chargers. And if it's not the Chargers, you have to convince me in some other scenario, and it would likely be Kansas City.
Probably.
That they would overtake the Chargers.
Patrick Mahomes ends up being the real deal, and that offense they have in Kansas City is so good that it's hard to keep up with them. Kind of like the Rams last year and just what they were able to do offensively. They went from one of the worst offenses to the best in terms of scoring points last year. I think right around 30 points a game. So, you know, could that be Kansas City this year with all the weapons that they have? It could if Patrick Mahomes ends up being the real deal.
Does Kansas City have the best weapons in the league if you were going to pick one running back, one tight end, and two receivers?
One running back, one tight end, two receivers. It's a pretty good group.
I think it's number one.
You look at Philly, who is their running back? Jay Ajayi. You got Ertz.
Zach Ertz.
Receivers, Alshon. And who is their second receiver?
Aguilar.
Aguilar, but I thought he was their slot receiver.
Torrey Smith?
Torrey's gone.
That's right.
But I think you put Kansas City ahead of them.
I think so.
Who else would be in the mix? How about the Giants? The Giants.
That's a good one.
So you got Saquon, you got Evan Ingram, you got OBJ and Shepard.
That's pretty impressive. I'm still taking Kansas City.
Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins,
Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce. OBJ would be the one that gets a check over anyone from Kansas City, but give me Travis Kelce over Evan Ingram. Give me Tyreek Hill over Sterling Shepard. Give me Kareem Hunt over Saquon Barkley. As of what we know right now, Kareem Hunt was a leading rusher in the league. Kansas City, if there was ever a position for a young quarterback to come in and have a rookie year reminiscent of a Dak Prescott or a who had terrific, Ben Roethlisberger, I believe, right? His rookie season. Whoever, just to walk into a situation and say, man, you have already got your bread buttered for you.
He's not a rookie, though.
He's not, right.
You keep forgetting he's not a rookie.
I know. I do keep doing that.
He seems like a rookie, but he only played the one game last year, but he does have that experience. In the NBA, we would say you're a rookie, pretty much. But in this situation, he had that experience of last year being in the meeting rooms, being around Alex Smith. So that's going to go a long way for him. He's comfortable now. So it's a lot different for him because he's been around all these guys all year long last year. And now he's the guy from the jump this year. So he should be a big step ahead of rookies.
Sure.
And then he has all these weapons around him. So,
and he's got Andy Reid calling plays for him.
You know, sometimes that's not a good thing.
Right, but we're not in January
playoffs.
Yet.
Right. Yeah.
And let me just say one more thing about this. These ESPN AFC West reporters all agreeing on the Chargers. The NFL, and if you've been following it for any legitimate amount of time, the NFL will humble you. As soon as you think you know something, it will show you that you don't. And I think of the Giants-Broncos game where every analyst across the bottom of the screen, Broncos, 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 Broncos. We had stink in the morning. Our Broncos defense is going to score more than the Giants offense. Once you think you have something figured out.
I'm going to throw stink under the bus there. That's a good one.
Once you think you got it all figured out, it will humble you. So,
yes, it will.
So let's just wait. Everyone's zero.
That's why
zero
you play the
zero.
Game. Look, that's a right. lot of injuries play a big part in your football season. They've already lost one of their studs. So, look. They should be the favorite, but you got to go out there and earn it.
That's it. Stoke, is the future now for the Broncos or not? We have some numbers that we need to relay to you, and you got to hear it, and we'll do it next. Is the future now for the Broncos or not? Very, very interesting piece done by ESPN insiders Lewis Riddick, Mike Sandow, and Field Yates, who went through team by team and rated each team's roster. But they did more than that. They took a magnifying glass over every operation that the league has to offer. And they evaluated the roster, the quarterback, the draft, the front office, and the coaching using a scale really like you use back in school.
Wow.
A plus is elite. An A grade, is great, 90 to 100. A B, very good, 80 through 90. C is average, 70 through 80. 60 to 70 is a D, very bad. You remember these grades, right?
Yeah, sure.
So after averaging the results of these panelists, each of the categories was weighted to create an overall score. This is fascinating what they did here. 30% of your score is for the roster. 20% of your score is for the quarterback. 15% of your score is for the draft. 15% of your score is for the front office. And 20% of the contribution of your score is from coaching. And the result is a comprehensive ranking based on how well each team is positioned for the future. And the window was looked at the next 3 years.
I put the Broncos, they probably, if I look at it from that perspective, I would put them probably, they probably gave them a C.
Somewhere between a 70 and an 80 average.
Yeah. I mean, because you look at the recent drafts, haven't been good enough. So future with some of these draft picks are questionable. Now, this could change really quickly with this draft class that they just drafted. And if some of those players from last year's draft class end up performing a lot better. Coaching, you know, last year wasn't good enough. Front office, you know, that has to do with some of the drafts previous. Has just been average here in the last few years. And if you're looking towards the future, quarterback, you think he got one, but you only got him locked up for 2 years. So a lot of question marks there, but still a good nucleus and that has a chance to hopefully improve on the grade. So I put it right there in the middle, right usually where I, you know, get my test back, and it was always right there in the average 70s, mid-70s.
C's get degrees.
Yes, they do. I like
C's
that.
Get degrees. So put an exact number on them. I'll put you on the spot here for a second and just arbitrarily give me a number.
72.
Okay. So after these guys went through it, Lewis Reddick, Mike Sandow, and Field Yates of ESPN Insider, looking at the roster, again, this is broken down by 30% roster, 20% QB, 15% draft, 15% front office, and 20% coaching. The final number spit out is a 74.9. So right dead smack in the middle of average. Okay?
Yep. That's about where I would put it, too.
When broken down further,
would you put it right around there? I mean, do you think they got this right? I think as we sit here today, they got it right.
But
it could change very quickly.
Yes, and I like the way you said that. From where we sit today, it looks like they have it right. It could change quickly, but for the reasons why I think that they got it right are still largely unknown. I think that they got them right, but I actually don't know yet. So when you're asking me to assign like a tangible grade, I don't want to bump it up because of what I think I know. You know, and I always say, don't let optimism bleed into expectation. So I don't want to piggyback off you too much here, but you put it at 72, I'd probably wind up putting it right at any 72, 73, yeah, 74, okay. 75, something like that. They put it at just about a 75, 74.9. But when they broke down the five categories, roster, quarterback, coaching, draft, front office, they gave you more specific examples. Roster got a 76. It ranked 17th in the NFL. Quarterback got ranked a 76. That ranked 23rd in the league. Coaching got ranked a 70. That got ranked 29th out of 32 teams in the NFL. The draft got ranked a 75. That ranked 23rd out of the 32 teams. And finally, the front office got assigned a grade of a 78. That was ranked 10th. So the highest marks that the Broncos got, and by definition, a top 10 rating, was to the front office. So this has to be because of what they've done in free agency.
Well, it's kind of funny because the front office should pretty much mirror the roster. They're the one that put together this roster. So, I mean, if the roster's 17, how's the front office 10? I mean, they're part of doing the draft. They're part of getting free agency. That's all your roster.
It's a good point. It's a really good point.
You know, obviously front office was part of hiring your coach also. And your coaching is 29th.
Mm.
So how is the front office so high in this ranking here when everything else is so low?
I really liked how you just looked at that because I don't think I would have used that lens. But you're right. The front office is responsible for the roster and the coaching and the draft, all of which are bottom third, according to ESPN insiders, Field Yates, Mike Sandow, and Lewis Riddick, who all guys I think we respect.
Oh, yeah. But I think they got it about right. But I look at this, Zach, and I say, this roster, okay, they got them at 17 right now. This year, after this year, that thing could be in top 10 like that, quickly. If these young players that were just drafted this year make any kind of impact, Garrett Bowles takes a big step forward. All of a sudden, DeMarcus Walker looks like a pass rushing specialist like he looked at Florida State when he led the country in sacks his last year at Florida State. And you start getting more production from, you know, Isaiah McKenzie looks like the returner that they thought he was going to be. And then he makes plays in the slot. Sua Cravens, the addition of him. And some of these other pieces, Bradley Roby just steps his game up and, you know, we don't even miss Aqib Talib. So that roster could take a big step forward. Quarterback, look, 23? 23rd? Okay. Look, if you want to put Case Keenum at 23... that's fine. Look, he only did it 1 year. I could see how you're doing that. But also, I could say Case Keenum is going to continue to get better and improve. And so after the year, you're going to look at Case Keenum and say, man, that guy's a fringe top 10 type of quarterback, 10, 12 quarterback. I mean, he's a true pro.
That's what he was last year.
Right. And he's going to continue to do that. So, you know, this stuff could change really, really quickly. We're sitting here and this is kind of how we viewed it too, right around the mid-70s, low-70s. And all of a sudden, if a few things hit, you know, you're high 80s. You
That's
know,
right.
All of a sudden, you get those bonus points.
If Royce Freeman walks into the NFL and does what a lot of folks expect him to do, by the way, given the opportunity that he's going to be given, how does that change?
What if him and D'Angelo Henderson are a terrific 1-2 punch?
That'd be fun.
Right? So it changes these scores really, really quickly, and that could happen. Bradley Chubb is just like, you know, Lawrence Taylor, Von Miller hybrid.
If Cortland Sutton is Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, how does that change the projection? Yeah, no, I'm with you. I am absolutely with you. They gave three breakdowns in this ESPN Insider article. Why they're here and essentially why we gave them the grades that we did. The biggest worry and what could change for the better. Let's start with why they're here. Quote, the future of Vance Joseph was in doubt near the end of the 2017 season, and while he will return for 2018, it's fair to wonder if he is viewed internally as the surefire long-term option. With premium pass rushers and an excellent defensive nucleus, Denver doesn't necessarily need Pro Bowl quarterback play from Case Keenum to return to the playoffs. He provided it in Minnesota last season, though. Can he maintain his performance? And that's from Field Yates.
I look at Vance, and that was another one that I didn't comment on. And I could see at the end of the year where we say, wow, coaching got so much better this year. It was obvious. You know, this guy's a lot more comfortable. Joe Woods is a lot more comfortable being a defensive coordinator now in his second year. Vance is handling things a lot differently than he did last year. He's a much, much improved football coach, head football coach, and so are his assistants. So, look, I mean, this thing could change really, really quickly. I mean, you hear how Vance is approaching this season. I think he's approaching it the right way. I think he was really critical of himself.
Yeah.
And he realizes the things that he needs to work on, and he realizes that, you know what, I'm coaching for my job here. And he knows the NFL coaching lifestyle, especially when you go 5-11 here in Denver. You got to win football games. So, and you hear it in his voice. He was really critical on the things that he needed to get better on and work on, and I think he will. So I think this coaching staff as a whole will take a big step forward this next year also.
How do you think they're viewing Vance inside of Dove Valley? How do you think Gary Kubiak, John Elway, you know, throw in Joe Ellis?
I have no idea.
Matt Russell, what do they think?
No idea. I hope they think just what I've just said. I don't know how they're viewing him. They might be viewing him as, look, you know, we don't think he has a chance, or look, or they're very optimistic about him. Who? I don't know. I would think that they're probably optimistic about him, or John would have let him go at the end of the year. I don't think John's going to hold on to him and say, you know what, I just got to do it because I got to do it. Because we're in a tough situation here. I don't want to be viewed as a coach killer.
You don't think that any of that and the turnover here in the last 3 years has...
Oh, that played a part. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Probably played a small part in it. There's no question in my mind that it did. But I think in the end, John still would have fired him if he viewed him as a coach that just can't get the job done. You know, it's like the Tampa Bay thing with Roberto Aguirre. You just, you know, you don't want to keep going down the same road and keep paying for your mistake. Just admit your mistake and move on. And I think that's what John would have done. I think, yes, that did play a part in it, that you don't want to be viewed as a coach killer, and you don't want to keep having coaching changes and all of this turnover with your coaches and your roster. That's just not a good way to be successful. But I do think that they probably view Vance as a guy that will get better and will improve and will be critical of his mistakes and the things that he needs to work on.
I think...
How do you think?
Well said, first of all. I more or less agree with everything you just said. But I wonder if for a rare moment in time that the front office and how they're thinking about it behind closed doors is actually synced up with how they're thinking about it in the community of Broncos country, where everyone is in prove it mode with Vance. Like I have been certainly critical of Vance. I'm not, and I don't want to break down through the whole thing again. I really have my doubts on that guy, but at the same time, I don't want one snapshot of a horrific season to be a lifelong indictment. I want to be receptive to it. I want to be open to the idea that John was right 2.5 years ago when he said that guy's going somewhere. I really believe in that guy. He soiled his entrance as the head coach of the Broncos, but at the same time, I don't want to be closed off and saying, fire Vance, he sucks, he can't coach. Did he show real signs of ineptitude last year? Yes. Was he brought in here to be a leader of men and it turned out to be the Wild Wild West? Yes. Did he make a proper adjustments? No. Was the team undisciplined? Yes. On and off the field? Yes. I have all those critiques about Vance, but at the same time, I know if I went back and listened to myself the first year in radio, I'd probably think like I sounded like an idiot. And I just want to continue to be just open to the idea that this guy can figure it out.
Yeah, and I think you have to be patient with the first-year head coach and realize that there are going to be growing pains and there's going to be mistakes made, and that's just part of it. And it's just like rookie football players. There's going to be a level of – there's going to be times where you look at these guys, you're like, what are you doing? But you got to be patient with them. You got to let them fight through their mistakes and learn from their mistakes and see if they improve and get better. And I think it's a situation where, you know what, they're going to be patient with Vance to a certain degree this year. It's not going to be a team that starts 1-3 and they can him. I don't see that happening.
Really?
I don't see that happening.
Oh, that's where you and I will disagree. Because if you go 1-3 at your first four, and three of those four are home games because the football gods didn't want Vance to be fired.
Okay, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that. But no, I still stick with it. I don't think they fire him after four games.
But if they're 1-3,
I don't think so.
It's home against the Seahawks, home against the Raiders, at Baltimore, and home against the Chiefs. So you got three of your first four games are home, but two of them are in division. You start 1-3, you could be 0-2 in division. And Vance is, you know.
I think it's a scenario, unless they go, you know, 1-9 or 1-8, they got nine games before the bye week. I think that is the time that, you know, if you make a move, that's when you make a move. Is before the bye week, because you have an extra week and you can get things settled in with what direction you want to head. I don't really see them making a move, because think about it. When coaching changes happen, do teams really improve? And do teams go from a 1-3 team and now we're going to make the playoff team? Usually that's not the case.
Typically not, no.
It doesn't just happen that way. Usually you continue, maybe you get a little bit better, but all of a sudden you're not going to be a playoff team. So you might as well stay the course and see if he can fight his way out of it, work his way through this, and get things back on track. And then by week 9, if it's not happening, then you can make a move and you realize, look, we're going to make a move at the end of the season anyway. Let's just do it now. Wash our hands. We got an extra week to prepare for the LA Chargers, and you do it before the bye.
So no matter what the record is.
What? No, I'm not going to say that.
You said a one win. You said one win.
Well, don't try to put words in my mouth.
Okay, okay.
I didn't say that.
Okay, so let me ask you the question.
If they're getting beat by 50 points every game, then he's probably fired after week 4, okay?
So hold on. Say they're 1-4 after 5 weeks. Vance coaches against the Rams week 6?
Yes. I believe so.
That I can just tell you, it ain't going to happen. There's no way. You cannot go 5-11. And the backdrop to this whole conversation is no back-to-back losing season since Richard Nixon was the president, 1972. That's the backdrop. The expectation is winning big. You just won a Super Bowl 900 days ago. You're going to hire Vance Joseph. He's going to have the longest losing streak in 50 years. You're going to have – and then the following season, after 5-11, you're going to start 1-5. Vance, John will say, you know what? I got a bunch of Southwest points.
I thought you
Here's
said one
my
and four.
Bag.
You said 1-4. And now you said 1-5. What did they say?
1-4. 1-4. If it's 1-4, does he coach against the Rams week 6?
I'm not sure.
I am.
I think he does.
You think so?
I think he does. Yeah, I do.
Man, that to me would be just clinging to hope and the idea. What's the old quote?
That could be the final straw, though. It could be. I mean, I think that if a team shows that they're, you know, incompetent, they're making all kind of mistakes, he's making all kind of mistakes, okay, I could see it happening. But if you're 1-4 and you're heading against the Rams in week 6 and it's a home game and they embarrass you at home, then
maybe that's the time.
Maybe that could be the time. But if it's a football team that's fighting and you're losing some close games and you're showing, you know, signs of life and you're 1-4, you're going to continue to roll them out there and continue to hope the team fights their way out of it and shows progress. So it depends on what the football team looks like. I mean, that's a big part of this, not just the win-loss record.
Right.
Like, you could be playing a lot of close games in the NFL and just have some bad luck, some misfortune, and lose a lot of close games. You're not going to fire them for 1-4. But if you're getting blown out and you look like a football team that just doesn't know what they're doing, yeah, I could see that happening. We'll see how it plays out.
I don't think that's going to happen, by the way.
I don't either. I think it's going to be a much improved football team, much improved coaching staff, and it's going to be fun this year. It is. I think they start off with a win against Seattle at home. They follow it up with another win against Oakland. They start off 2-0, and then we'll see what happens after that. But you're going to Baltimore on the road. But this is a football team that I think will start fast, and this defense will be back to the level that we've seen it at, more accustomed to. They'll be back making big plays, and this offense will look much improved. And I really do believe that.
I think so, too. And what you said to start the season is exactly the way I'm viewing it. Seattle's going to come in here and get beat week 1. I really believe that. I believe Seattle is going to come in here and get beat. And
they're a football team that I don't know if they have an identity anymore.
I was just going to say, I was going to use the word direction. Like, what right. is their direction? What is their identity? What is their plan? Who are they?
Pete Carroll seems like he's wearing on a lot of the players, and they're turning that roster over and trying to start fresh, and then Earl Thomas is holding out. He said, hey, either give me a contract or trade me, one or the other. So you got a lot of situations there where there's a lot of turnover. They were really bad offensively. Their offensive line was a mess last year. Now their defense won't be what it's used to being. I don't know where they're heading. So that to me needs to be a statement game from the Broncos.
And my gut says it will be.
I think so too.
And then you got the Raiders week 2. With another...
That's going to be great. John Gruden coming to town.
How about that? That's going to be fun, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be fun. And you know what? Why not? Why not? I look at Oakland not too dissimilarly than the way that we just talked about the Raiders. I know they have the head coach.
The Seahawks?
I look at the Raiders the same way we talk about the Seahawks. Thank you. I look at, you know, Pete Carroll. Really good coach. John Gruden, if you want to say he's a really good coach, perfect. They each have young, dynamic, terrific quarterbacks. But beyond that, I can't point to anything. And, you know, I know they have Khalil Mack and you know, what are they now? Jordy Nelson there. You can point to a couple things, but I just don't see the Raiders.
Amari Cooper. I mean, they got you know. But
yeah.
I mean, Seattle's got
playmakers. I'm sleeping a little bit.
Seattle's got Brandon Marshall, the receiver. Doug Baldwin.
Seeing Brandon Marshall in the Seahawks jersey. That's gonna be different.
Yeah. No tight end in Seattle. Who's their tight end? I mean, Jimmy Graham's gone, right?
Yep.
Did he go to Green Bay?
He's now in Green Bay.
And
that'll be
Luke
fun to
Wilson?
Watch, by the way.
Luke Wilson is gone. He is in Detroit. So, I mean, who's their tight end now in Seattle? A lot of turnover there.
That's a
So it's a really good game for the Broncos to open up with at home. A team that's in transition, they don't know which way they're heading, a roster that's being flipped over, and you got them first game of the season.
That's exciting.
Yes, it's set up. This thing is set up for the Broncos to get off to a fast start. What you really want with this team, especially after last year, get off, win a couple football games, start, you know, feeling good about yourself and the direction that you're heading. You're not thinking about last year anymore. You're playing these games at home. It's set up. It's really set up nicely for the Broncos.
And you know who's set up for a slow start?
Who?
Kansas City. Week one, young quarterback, Ben Simmons rookie, Patrick Mahomes. Week one, at the Chargers. Week two.
I can't wait to. You got me fired. I can't wait to watch that game.
Watch this.
Chargers, Chiefs.
Week one, in Los Angeles. Week two, for KC, at the Steelers.
Ooh.
Week three,
at Pittsburgh.
Ooh. Hey, ha, ha, ha. Week three, against the Niners. Week four, in Denver. Week five, Jacksonville. And week six, Patriots. Good luck, Patrick!
Oh!
Good luck, Patrick!
Oh!
I mean, think about that.
Welcome to the NFL, buddy.
Welcome to the NFL.
Wow.
Unbelievable. We have more to get to in this breakdown because they gave biggest worry and what could change for the better. But we'll table that for just a second because we have to have a conversation right now that I've been waiting to have for about a month. If you are done with your lunch break and you're going back into work, pull us up on the app because you do not want to miss this conversation. After much thought, Stoke, I think it will be an organizational failure if one player in particular doesn't work out for the Broncos. I'll tell you who and why next.